next on Girlfriend.
Most people speak in monologues, not dialogues. We go along, we build ourselves, we build our personalities, we think we're this, we think we're that, and sooner or later it comes crashing down and it doesn't service us. And the external cannot come except from the internal. So what we externalize is what we're internally thinking.
Welcome to Girlfriend Relationship Radio Rebooted. Your host, hypnosis practitioner and full-time psychic, Cynthia Chavan. Also in the studio, John Miles, certified practitioner of hypnosis and NLP, and Cynthia's husband. My name's Jeff Newman. BDigiX.com is what you've clicked on, your online listening experience. And today on Girlfriend, we're going to be talking about people in your life. People in your life you can't control, which basically means everybody. And we're going to have building blocks for better relationships. Today's building block, authentic self. So Cynthia, people in our lives, and they range from family to business partners to neighbors, and we really don't have any control over their thought process or actions, or do we?
No, we don't. Everybody lives in their own universe and their own thought process. But we do influence, just like anything that you put in the water influences the water. You yourself, your thought processes, your energies, what you put out will influence as they slowly absorb or quickly absorb the information into their universe and decide whether it's applicable or not applicable. So the best way to influence people that are in your environment is to be yourself. And by being so, by being it at all times, whatever situation is going on and whatever circumstance is going on, have to look at it as like, what do I want to put out on the radio? What do I want to feed out into this universe? What do I want to, your verbiage continues to go on. The water continues to go on. The air continues to go on. What do you want to feed out there that people will subconsciously, as well as consciously, hear and feel and choose what their reaction to it is. Of course, it's always their choice as to how they respond, how they react, how they absorb, but you will influence them.
That's where you get into the can't control part of this sentence, because yes, you do want to influence them. Yes, you do want to communicate with mm-hmm. people like your neighbors. Mm-hmm. That's a pet peeve of mine because I have some uncontrollable neighbors. But what you're saying to them...
Is that what they think about you?
Maybe.
Give me an example, Jeff.
No, I really do have some certifiable neighbors. I really do.
I believe you. We have one of those, too.
I'm an unusual guy. I have some eccentricities. I don't work a 9-to-5. I don't wear a suit. I don't do it in the neighborhood that I live in, and you guys live similarly, is what used to be called dot-com alley. It's a lot of computer... programming types, and those who were involved in computers 20 years ago during the boom. And that's when this area by Dulles Airport here in Washington, D.C. area, that's when this area grew. So there are a lot of people in my neighborhood who don't talk to other human beings every day. They mm-hmm. sit in front of a screen, or they sit in a home office, and they don't have interpersonal skills. One of the things I do have is the ability to have a conversation and ability to be civil with someone, and to know how to deal with people. That's mm-hmm. what I've been doing for 30 years. Some of my neighbors have not. Some of my neighbors cannot carry on a conversation.
So they're stunted.
You could look at it that way. Another word is they're unreasonable. And
they're stunted and in projection.
Correct. And they're unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And there is probably a reason why they've chosen that career path, because they can't deal with people, or because they're stunted. They haven't had the ability or the opportunity right. to deal with people. So as much as I have tried to be very pragmatic and patient, some neighbors just simply are not receptive to wanting to be a good neighbor.
Right.
So. You know, so I just don't talk to these particular people.
It's what our daughter Corey would call deflicted. They're yes, deflicted.
Yeah.
So what's anyhow, the problem? So, you don't talk to them.
In essence, there isn't any. You know, I actually have become overly nice to a few. And I say a few. There's just one in particular. We had another neighbor. When I say they had neighborhood problems, we had another neighbor who had a child that had many mental problems. They have since moved away, but the problems exasperated around the neighborhood to something that was criminal and illegal. I mean, she was psychotic and bipolar and made her do some things and damage property and cars and et cetera, et cetera. Anyhow, those are problems that are, that's concrete, tangible problems. Let the law enforcement agency deal with. What I want to talk about
those actually aren't problems, they're symptoms.
Right, that's true.
Symptoms that manifested in I had a problem. I had
I
had to get four tires.
Right. Put there are people that are sick.
Obviously.
And then there are people that are, you know, within the spectrum of not sick.
Those that are not sick, let's deal with communicating. And originally you had said you can influence people. Sometimes the words you say are not being perceived or received they're just fodder for someone to make an opinion of you.
Absolutely. Because everybody runs it through their system, hears it through their dialogue, their internal dialogue, and they're not comprehending, listening, or curious about what you are saying. They're just taking the words inside and utilizing them in the manner in which they want to utilize them in. You have somebody that's a non-curiosity of who you are. You have somebody that is detached, that's living in a cellular world, I mean, in their own cell. They're not going outside of their selling, saying there's something out there besides me. An apple doesn't mean an apple to this man the same way it means to me. I always use the apple because there's so many different kinds of apple. And, you know, people will say, Jewish, I like apple. And they'll go, all right, am I talking about a computer? Am I talking about a Granny Smith? You know, it's again, language and what one wants to interpret it. And it means something different to each and every individual. So your language to them means something totally and completely different because they've run it through their system.
There's one thing I want to, in a previous show, John, you mentioned being an objective viewer. I'd like you to go back to that a little bit, explain what that is. And in doing so, perhaps both of you can talk about what effective communication really is and how we can become better at communicating.
I think good communication starts with good listening. Understanding that this individual is not exactly and not always listening to what you have to say. So if you listen to them and if you realize that you're speaking to someone in a different language and you get into their language and the understanding of what their language means to them, no different than learning a foreign language, which then, you know, people when they speak a different language than their native tongue, they start to feel different in that language. When they start to speak French, they start to feel different. So the words mean something different. Well, if you take that thought process and say, I speak Cynthia, you speak Jeff, John speaks John. When I'm speaking to John, if I do not know I'm speaking to John in John language, and I just want to speak in a monologue about myself instead of a dialogue with him, I'm not going to communicate. Most people speak in monologues, not dialogues. A dialogue means that I sit, I wait, I listen, and I try to hear from your perspective, which is a different language, not take and put it inside and say it means this, but be curious and say, oh, what does that mean to you? Even if it's something simple, because the more simple, the easier it gets, the more often you do it, the less likely you are to need it the next conversation you have with them, because you've learned part of their language.
I think there needs to be a common denominator also. But part of what you said makes a lot of sense. The more you speak French, the more comfortable you are, the more effective you are at getting a point across. When in business or in the workplace, you have to deal with hundreds of personalities, hundreds of languages, there has to be a common ground or a common path that you can speak and be effective in what you have to communicate to people. I think a lot of people, by being guarded, worry about what others think of the way in which that they talk to others. I think that that leads to some people not being effective as communicators because they're so guarded. Again, there's good reasons for watching what you say and thinking before you speak. The negative of that is being too scared to actually express yourself.
Now, this individual, I just want you mentioned Yeah, I know. Is there no bridge? Is there no bridge that you can cross with this individual? That sports or computers anything at all?
There's nothing.
There's the commonality.
There's the commonality of
air and day.
Yeah.
Hello, how are you today?
Exactly.
And then you create the commonality of day. They had a good day, they had a bad day, they had some kind of day, and they may or may not express it. But if you ask them enough, people will eventually become, I've been doing this for years. I talk to people all the time that come in that are literally afraid to sit in the same room with me. Mm-hmm. And by the time they leave, they're perfectly comfortable and kiss me goodbye.
Right.
Why? Because I'm not there to judge them on their conversation or their delivery of it. They feel that. They know that. They're already accepted. I see them and me as one solar universe, not separation. They feel
that's
that.
That's the objective
they know
viewer.
That.
That's using the objective
right.
viewer.
And so therefore they release. Whatever comes out of their mouth, I find commonality with. So therefore, eventually, it becomes very fluid. Because if they know they have commonality, they know they are withstanding no judgment, they are free to speak who they are, what they are, when they are, without any restrictions. And that you can do with anyone. What you're talking about, somebody else coming in and being afraid, is because they're afraid to be judged. If you go in without a judgmental attitude towards the person who's afraid to be judged, eventually that facade will melt in your presence, maybe not somebody else's, because they'll feel the non-judgment they'll start to release.
Just recap a little bit, we'll go into our next segment. What are the steps that someone can take to not be afraid to express themselves, not be afraid of being judged when entering into a social conversation or a business conversation?
Well, it goes back, judge not, ye be judged, so don't judge yourself. If you sit there,
thou shalt not judge thyself.
Right.
Is really what it should have said, because
right.
that's really the first. That's the place where judgment
right.
starts.
Right. Well, that's what I mean by it.
Yeah, we're so incredibly harsh. Teenagers, teenage girls, men, women. We're so ridiculously hard on ourselves.
Well, to thy own self be true, henceforth thou can be false to no one. Right. So it goes. It
thanks,
really,
Bill.
Truly goes back to that. Seriously, it does.
She's channeling Shakespeare again.
It goes back to that. You know, if you are truly non-judgmental of yourself, if you know that you are a sum composite of everything that you have ever been and needed to have every experience that you had in order to become aware of who you are, then the judgment goes out the window about yourself. You're not hesitant about what comes out of your mouth anytime, any place, any space, and therefore other people aren't hesitant in front of you.
It's Relationship Radio Rebooted, and of course, relationships begin with oneself. You're listening to Girlfriend right here on BDGX.com. Of course, you can listen to the show at Cynthia's website, which is www.cynthiachauvin.com, Cynthia, CHAUVIN.com, and now you can subscribe to the Girlfriend podcast on iTunes, which we're very excited about. Coming up, building blocks for better relationships. Today, we will be talking about authentic self. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to Girlfriend on BDGX.com. I'm Jeff Newman, joined by Cynthia Chauvin, John Miles, and our guest in the studio today, Keisha Merritt. Welcome, Keisha.
Hello.
Today's building block for better relationship is called authentic self. And I want to dissect the word authentic here, but also hear from Cynthia and John what authentic self actually is.
Authentic self, I'm going to use a metaphor right up front, and you're going to have seen the movie, and if not, you're going to have to rent it. The Legend of Bagger Vance, great movie. Will Smith is sort of a Jesus Christ character, and he talks about helping Juna find his authentic swing, the swing that is only for him. And I think that's really a great metaphor for the authentic self, to find one's authentic
right.
swing.
And he said very elegantly that the Juno you were, you can no longer be. Well, I think that happens to all of us, that we come to a point where our experiences, we can no longer be. They're no longer servicing us. It's like with Juno in the movie, his experiences that he had, that he decided was himself, was no longer servicing him. It was causing him to be an alcoholic. He couldn't play his game. He was ostracized. He ostracized himself. And so his image of himself became the weight of himself. He could not be that self anymore. In order for him to live, go on, he needed to find his authentic swing, his authentic self, that which he was truly brought to the earth to be, which I believe happens to all of us. We go along, we build ourselves, we build our personalities, we think we're this, we think we're that, and sooner or later it comes crashing down and it doesn't service us anymore.
In your experience, when it comes crashing down, is it one straw that broke the camel's back incident, or is it the multitude of negative experiences
yes.
that someone finally realizes, I can't do this anymore?
Most of the time it builds. Most of the time it's several things. It's the straw that broke the camel back. Everything comes together. The person doesn't have a problem in one area. It's four or five, six different things at one time. And it says, okay, you know, does this persona that I have been living, this persona that I have created, that I have created behavior from, does it bring me any joy, any happiness? We find ourselves getting empty. There's no happiness in anything that we do. Everything's a struggle. Everything is angry. Everything is being put out. And then it comes to the point where, you know, okay, it's opportunity for the authentic self to rise and create a new human being, a new visible, creative, dynamic, authentic self that you were meant to be. That these experiences weren't necessarily derogatory experiences. They led to the intersection of a created reality without divinity and a small-mindedness, which intersects with the divinity, so that you create an opportunity to bring then divine awareness into all aspects of that you've been.
Now, let's be realistic about how we take care of that. There isn't a bag of ants carrying my bag. How do I...
Oh, yeah, there he is.
Well, tell me where to find him or her. How does one introspectively become who we want to be by learning from our experiences?
Learning that we play roles. I mean, he played a role, we played a role, we're playing these different roles, but we're the actor, not the role. And it's a strong visualization, I think, to actually be able to access that we're not the clothes we wear, we are not those things. How do you get naked? That's a good question. And Cynthia, I'm sure, has a couple of opinions on how she gets naked.
I love when she analogizes about that. Yeah.
Well, when you strip everything else away and you go, okay, if I'm not this, I'm not that. If I'm not the other, then who am I? What's underneath the underneath? And you're talking about, is it simple? Yes, it's natural. Everything leads you to that point anyway. When all else comes down, you become aware. When all else, all the other fragments of the world that you've created come in touch with awareness, it can't do anything but become more aware. So the minute you open the door, the light comes in and it just keeps on shining and becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And the door is always open. We only believe it's closed. And the minute you look to see that it's open, it becomes wider and wider and wider. And I'm not trying to be fictitious with it. It literally starts to take over. So it's like water going flowing onto the table. It doesn't stop here. It just keeps going. It'll take over that piece of paper. If you put water on the table, the paper gets sopped up, and it's going to keep going. It'll keep flooding you with information to inform you about you, who you are, why you're here, how you're designed. It's a constant stream of information that's available that the minute you allow yourself to be quiet, just for a second, will flood in.
I have a question. It's probably multi-layered here, but before I lose my train of thought, I'm going to try to verbalize it. We've all seen and experienced people in public life who are conflicted. A terrific senator who has done such great work for the community and for his respective state, but he's got a sex scandal going on. He's good at 5, 6, 7 things. He has major flaws. We all have relatives and friends. We all have mirrors. We ourselves have
I would say
flaws.
That the senator doesn't have a sex scandal. The senator has a bunch of people judging him.
Okay.
You know, sex scandal is only because he lives in public life.
Right.
And, you know, so, or a governor who flies to another Argentina or wherever because, well, he may not have reconciled his public life with his passions. He is not, as Joseph Campbell would say, not fully and honestly following his bliss.
How does one fully and honestly follow that or get rid of what could be perceived as negatives or introspectively negative? I'm a good father, I'm a good friend, I'm a good trombone player, but you know, I have some faults I want to deal with. How do I maintain my integrity for 7/8 of my life and work on the parts?
Focus on the bliss. What you focus on will grow. It'll take over the rest of it. You know, there's nothing that you've done, nothing that anyone's done in their life that needs to be judged, rectified, changed. We need to become aware, but not judge. And what I mean by aware, once you put the light on, everything becomes small. Once you put the light on, everything makes sense. There's nothing to judge. Judgment occurs in a smaller section of your mind that says there must be right, there must be wrong, not things leading to other things.
There are outside substances and circumstances that some people rely on, mm-hmm. whether that's alcohol and drugs, mm-hmm. or, and I don't mean any disrespect here, the church. Mm-hmm. Some people rely on those things to help them deal. Talk to me a little bit about, is that a positive? Certainly abuse of a substance is not, but people are looking for things to help them.
Right.
I have something I just want to quickly say about churches and mosques and any religious institution. People often go to churches for the structure. Mm-hmm. And Cynthia and I love going to churches and any place. They're beautiful. I personally don't go for the structure, the statues, the stained glass, all of it's beautiful. I go for the empty space inside the structure. To me, a church is actually representative, or a religious building is not the structure, it's the space inside the structure, the emptiness. Not to do too zen on it, but I think that, to me, that's really where the bliss is in that freedom and then that openness.
All the things that you're talking about, I think they're coping mechanisms to keep a reality that doesn't function.
Okay.
Whether that be drugs, alcohol, spending, religion. It's things that will keep a status quo, a sense of control, a sense of order that makes everybody feel good because then there's somebody else in charge and they're not in charge of their own personal space and life, and therefore they don't have to be held responsible for their own space and life. But at the same time, when you give up one, you give up the other. When you give up your responsibility for your life, you give up your ability to respond to your life. So, and then you only into reaction of your life. So, you know, what coping mechanisms we have, or I believe attached to maintaining an illusion of safety and security and structure that is no longer functioning. If it functioned, we would not have wars, we'd not be hurting each other, we'd be not starving each other to death. It wouldn't be okay to go out and let somebody be hungry on the street. Mm-hmm. You know, those denial aspects that we have, which I don't even want to call it denial, those things that we use that we say, okay, we feel safe on this side of the wall, is the very essence of limitation that is creating the problems that we have today. You open up, then you don't need those aspects. You may enjoy a drink, you may enjoy a glass of wine. Go out and enjoy 10, but enjoy.
Right.
There's a difference between enjoying your food, enjoying your alcohol, enjoy your praying, than utilizing those things to create a false sense of self.
I've also seen people who are at the top of their game in whatever that is, and I'll use some very public examples. Charlie Parker, the best saxophone player in the world, that wasn't enough. He was complacent, I'm guessing, with the fact that he could do whatever he wanted on the saxophone.
Right.
Ray Charles, even Miles Davis, many, many top-notch musicians and rock musicians, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, who, because they were the best at what they did or were perceived as being the best and had the idolation of their fans, turned to drugs or worse, and it was their demise.
Right.
The creative energies that made them as good as they were, apparently, took over their world. They became what they were. And then were either too bored with it or had to go to alternating substances to change the way.
That's interesting. You're saying, you're talking about how creativity is sort of like a gateway drug to drugs.
I am, actually.
Lack of a better way.
I am.
Yeah, it can be. Absolutely.
I mean, hip-hop, I mean, and I don't want to get specific about it, that there are very few hip-hop artists that are not smoking weed all the time.
Right.
Again, I'm generalizing, and for those hip-hop artists who don't, I apologize, but it's part of the culture. And most of what's, and rock and roll artists too, I'm not just, I don't want to just generalize like that. Most of the Beatles' best stuff were done on weed.
Well, but you know, when is it an enhancement? Like, you know, Keisha had mentioned when we were in the break, Keisha had mentioned, you know, issues with relationships with, the, with, in this case, you'd mentioned your mom. When are these relationships with anything, the church, our parents, drugs, alcohol, music, when are they enhancements and expressions of our authentic self, and when do they start going against our authentic self and going towards what I would refer to as the ego self?
I think people, well, I don't want to get too deep, but I think people are a lot of like the world, and that the world has seasons, and the seasons change. We have four, five, six seasons. Some people say more than others. And I think that equates a lot to our lives. We have seasons, and like you were saying, Cynthia, that like they we shed different times in our life, different situations, whether it's dealing with drugs, we went through a period of that, we went through a period of, you know, trying to find ourselves and what do we want to do in our career, our relationships. A lot of people in going through those seasons, they never identify with finding that, that the reason for going through those seasons are you're ultimately trying to get to your authentic self.
Correct.
So that's where the struggle comes in, because they don't realize the whole meaning, or they haven't
cleaned out their closet. They have too many old pairs of shoes to hold on to.
Yeah, that or some people are here and don't really understand their purpose in themselves, not necessarily the purpose in the world. Mm-hmm. They're so busy trying to figure out their purpose and their footing in the world, they haven't figured out the purpose in themselves so they can be better for everything outside of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think that they go into a space where people are looking for somebody to have the answer for them. People are looking for somebody to take care of them, i.e. religion, government, so forth and so on, family. People are looking for an externalization of God instead of an internalization of God, an internalization of resources, an internalization of love. They look for an externalization of love, an externalization of this, and the external cannot come except from the internal.
Mm-hmm.
So what we externalize is what we're internally thinking. So the process has to start with the internal thinking, that if there is something lacking in my life, I have the ability to internalize the answer for the question from there.
One final question, because we are running out of time.
Sure.
Are we all, consciously or subconsciously, in our quest to find our authentic self, becoming our parents?
No.
Wow.
Not my parents.
No. No. Yes and no.
Because
yes, our divine parents, but not our biological parents. No.
Yeah, I totally agree.
We are not. So why so often do many of us say, oh my God, I'm turning into my father, my mother?
Well, that's what happens when you're not internalizing your own power.
If you're happy with
that's
it,
when
great.
You haven't found your authentic
self.
That's
right.
The closest thing
it's like
a cup. It's the closest thing he can identify
that's
with.
That's exactly.
So that's
exactly.
What you feel like that's the... That's
Ditto.
The way you're supposed to go.
That's
actually,
right.
For me personally, I actually laugh at it. I'll say something I have said something in the past to one of my kids. My kids are grown now, so we don't talk anymore. No, when they're growing up, and oh my God, I just sounded like my father. That's what my mother said to me.
Perhaps that's your programming.
If we were playing saxophone and suddenly you sounded like Charlie Parker, you wouldn't judge yourself for sounding like, you'd say, oh, I just sounded like my father. That's really cool. You know, right. I just sounded like Charlie Parker.
I don't want to sound like Charlie Parker. I don't want to sound like anybody. I want to sound like me.
But at times you sound like someone else.
Not so much anymore.
Okay.
Not so much. I kind of got the team going now, like, you know, okay, all parts are in charge of awareness. I have retooled a lot of my aspects that take center stage, that say, gee whiz, you need to be this, or you need to be that, or you need to say this, or you need to say that, or you need to impress this, or you need to impress that. And I took them all and said, ooh, I love you, you're great, you're wonderful. Now, we have a bigger mission. All of our aspects are looking for a job to do. You give them a job to do, they come back and reward you tenfold. I don't want to get rid of the 10-year-old with the creative imagination that used to go out and say I was adopted because I couldn't stand my parents. I don't want it. That's very creative. But I wanted to let her know that she can be creative and connected, and that she can use that creativity differently now.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Scary true.
Authentic self. It's fascinating. And it's Cynthia Chavan. Girlfriend, Relationship Radio Rebooted. Be sure to visit CynthiaChavan.com. That's Cynthia, CHAUVIN.com. And of course, you can download this show and other podcasts. Subscribe to Girlfriend on iTunes. I'm Jeff Newman. Thanks for listening.